you're right. Tech companies are getting away with a lot.
This has become like just the snake that eats itself. When we play a gig, people say, you don't have to get paid because it's to promote the record. Now, after piracy and everything, people say, well, the actual record is promotion for your tours. That doesn't work. So then it's like, sync is the one thing that we always kind of hung on to, as we just said. If we get the sync company saying, well, it's promotion for your record, that would be like saying that actors shouldn't get paid. Because look, they're on TV for an hour. Look what great promotion that is.
Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the McCove Mindset Podcast. This week, we're going to sit down with my friend, Helianne Linvall. She's an award-winning songwriter, musician, and she writes for publications like The Guardian. She's currently the head of business relations at Audley, which is a music rights management platform. And as a songwriter, she has worked with some of the biggest songwriters in the world, working with artists that have worked with Kelly Clarkson, Britney Spears, Kenny Chesney, Carrie Underwood, the Backstreet Boys, Mark Anthony, among others. This woman is such an advocate and champion for creators' rights. I am really looking forward to bringing you this episode. And as always, if you like what you hear, hit like, leave a comment, and subscribe. Let's get to it. Welcome to the McCove Mindset Podcast.
Thank you. Lovely to be here.
I appreciate you being here. I'm taking the time out of your day. Yeah, I wanted to have you on because you're such an advocate for the business side of music. And also, like, you know, fighting for songwriter rights. How did you get into that space?
I had a few records out. Now, when I think back, I had a few records out when I was a teenager in Sweden. I was a featured singer on a record in New York that did quite well. Got a lot of airplay on like Hot 97, and I performed at
the record?
It was called "Let the World Dance." It was called BC Underground, the act. It was somebody from Brass Construction, Randy Muller. The thing is that when I think about it, I don't even know what I got paid for that. You know, I probably got paid like a few hundred, which I probably thought was really good when I'm like 20 years old, for like an afternoon in the studio. And that's all. And I found it on like the streaming services, and my name is like nowhere to be found.
Oh wow. They didn't credit you.
No. I mean, wow. Nothing against Randy. I don't know. I mean, I've met Randy since, and it is what it is, but it just goes to show, like, back in the, you know, how all those indie records, like the credits, there's just no kind of, I don't even know under what kind of, even the songs that I had out as a teenager, I wouldn't even know where to look now. I mean, the only reason I found this was because I found it on YouTube first. And then, because YouTube is like the best search engine ever. They don't pay anything, but it's a good search engine because they have all music. You know, whether it's been released or not, you can probably find it if you know what to look for. I didn't know anything about these things. When I got my first publishing deal, I thought, great, I can make money. Like, they'll take care of all that stuff. I'll just make music. And, you know, the royalties will be coming in. The whole thing of, like, discussing splits, like, nobody wants to do that because, you know, it feels like giving somebody a prenup on your first date or something. So you just assume that it's going to be split equally, which, you know, down the line you realize not everybody have the same assumptions. You definitely don't collect people's IPI numbers or their, you know, anything like that. There's so many things that you don't know about. And actually, I got signed before streaming. So when streaming came along and suddenly, like, well, first we had piracy and then we had like downloads and then we had streaming. And I actually, at that point, I'd been signed to a couple of major publishers And I thought I could kind of see, it was before streaming, that I wanted to kind of like do something else at the same time. And I got a column for The Guardian called Behind the Music, that I would do like a weekly column for them, talking about what it's like being a music creator. Kind of initially, I was talking a lot about piracy and like what we actually make, what songwriters make versus artists, and how we don't make money. We can't, like, you know, make money from merchandise and all those things. So actually the music is what we make money from. So when people say, oh, you know, you don't have to get paid for the music, you can tour, and that's going to kind of pay you everything, that obviously doesn't work. It doesn't even work for artists. But at that point, you know, I remember at The Guardian, they didn't even know, like, what they asked me what publishing was, if I could like explain that in an article, like with one or two sentences. And I realized that actually they didn't know that there was like two copyrights to a song. I mean, they've gotten a lot better now, I think, but it just kind of showed that a lot of the mainstream people of the public don't know that always that artists don't always write their own songs. That right. There's this whole kind of village it takes to make a record. So I wrote a lot of things for them, and because it was, there were so few kind of columns in national newspapers that actually would talk about these things. So suddenly I got all these organizations, like the BPI, which is like the RIAA of the UK, they reach out to me. The Musicians Union would reach out to me. Like PRS reached out to me. Everybody wanted me to write about, you know, what was going on in their particular field. And that's when I started learning what was actually going on, and all the kind of inequities, and then started looking at my own royalty statement. I kind of realized, wow, you know, it's like streaming is not going to pay my rent. And I think through that, I then got involved with the British Academy of Songwriters and Composers, which is, I guess it's like the Music Creators of North America, the MCNA or something like that. You know, there's a few in the US, there's a few different organizations. So I got involved with that, and then I got more and more kind of active. And now I'm the, sorry, I don't, might be mine. And now I'm involved in the European Composer and Songwriter Alliance. So that's how now I'm the president of the European Composer and Songwriter Alliance.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations. What are the top three things that songwriters need to know to try to generate an income for themselves?
Well, the first thing that they need to know is that they need to join a PRO, obviously. I think that's like the basic thing. Not everybody right. does. An artist needs to do that as well. You need to make sure that you register all your songs as quickly as early, and have those, you know, uncomfortable split discussions as early as possible. If you're in the studio with somebody, usually it's very simple. You know, to me, it's like you just split it equally. You know, whatever.
Right. Makes everything so much easier when you're just like, yeah, it's down the middle.
Yeah, exactly. Or if it's three people, you know, three ways. And it's when it gets complicated is when I work quite a lot in dance music. So we're sometimes not ever in the same studio. I have records out with people that I've never met. Actually, in dance music, that's quite common. Right. So then it could, and then what happens then sometimes is like people get added after you've written the song, and then splits get distributed along the way. So you have to have uncomfortable conversations at that point sometimes. So, but those things, because if you don't agree on the split, then nobody's going to get paid.
I think that that's a good, you know, a good point, is that your songs need an opportunity. And then what you do with those opportunities can really have a deep impact on what happens with your career. Mm-hmm. And that's going to lead me to a segue, which is that this podcast, you know, is sponsored by Joyburst, this energy drink company, right? And the Joyburst talent search is going on right now. So the Joyburst talent search is a talent search that right now it's running. It's running from February 15th to March 15th. And then there's a voting period from March 15th until the end of March. And the grand prize is a $10,000 cash prize and a song publishing deal. And this being involved with this project, with this campaign, and with this company all came out of a song. This came out of writing a song for a brand, and that brand liking the song, taking the song, bringing on Vanilla Ice to record the song. That song then going out and being kind of like toured on the I Love the 90s tour, which brought in, you know, like some more work and brought this opportunity to work on this particular campaign, in which it was like, okay, cool. Maybe there's a way to bridge some other things. And none of that would have happened without a song. And so when you said in your top three things with the bonus extra four that sync is important, I'm like, yeah, there's actually a really remarkable kind of thing that you can do with sync that goes beyond an upfront payment.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you think of like right now, Love Island, I mean, I don't know how big Love Island is in the States, but it's huge.
Everyone is talking about this show. Yeah. Right. Like, I don't know about it like that.
It's been going for years here. And, if you get a song on Love Island, then that is, it has such a, because it has such a huge audience, and the songs play such a kind of, you know, intricate, it's like you watch a movie, though it's a reality show. So you can, by having a song there, that could kind of feed into you going into the charts as well.
Such a big thing in sync too. You know, like types of usage, you know, because when you use a word like usage, right, like that's one of those words that can, right, it covers so many different things, right? And so, you know, on TikTok, for instance, it's like, look, you can have your music, it got there, let's say you're an independent, use DistroKid or TuneCore or something like that, CD Baby, you uploaded your music, you've click the boxes that allow it to be on TikTok, it's there for usage, right? But so that usage is different than commercial usage. You have to allow for commercial usage if you want to be able to run an advertisement off of the back of that song. So if you want to take the sound, upload it into the video, that's fine. It can be distributed, it can go viral. But if you want to then put paid promotion behind it, well, that's a different kind of usage. So it has to be cleared for that usage. And it's the same thing in like TV advertising stuff, where it's like, well, are you licensing it for digital? Are you licensing it for broadcast? And sometimes it's like, sometimes they have to pay for each type of usage. If it's like, okay, well, this is a 15-second spot, that's one particular kind of usage. If you create a 30-second spot, that's another kind of usage. And if you have a minute spot, that's a different kind of usage. And you need to pay for all three of those things. And then is it going to be formatted to go onto a different type of platform? So if it was for digital, but then you decide that you want to run a radio ad or promotion, well, now we've entered into broadcast. And like, you know, okay, is it going to go to TV? Okay, that's different. And there's different rates and things that, you know, are kind of worked out for that. Usage can be, a very broad term. And I think that you're right. Tech companies are getting away with a lot of usage.
And I think that because most of those rules that you're talking about are worked out for television, for network television initially. And so much that happens online is being treated like it's in a whole different world with a whole, you know, different, you know, type of rules, which really it shouldn't be. And I mean, to bring back the promotional, go back to the promotional argument, I remember I actually wrote an article about it when I was writing my column for The Guardian, because it really pissed me off. There was the music supervisor for Glee, and he had done a presentation for independent labels, or like he was on a panel, and they were talking about, and obviously people wanted to be on Glee. It had a lot of power to kind of break songs and artists. And he said, you know, I don't understand why we still have to pay for music, to use music, because it's such a, you know, it's such great promotion. And I wrote an article that kind of said, well, this has become like just the snake that eats itself. So when we play a gig, people say, oh, you don't have to get paid because it's to promote the record. Now, after piracy and everything, people say, well, the actual record is promotion for your tours. So that doesn't work. So then it's like, okay, well, maybe your the sync. Sync is the one thing that we have always kind of hung on to, as we just said, you know. And then if we get the sync company saying, well, it's promotion for your record, then right, where is that? It's all promotion. And I said, that would be like saying that actors shouldn't get paid. Because look, they're on TV for an hour. Look what great promotion that is. Maybe they can do some advertising for some beer.
Right.
Like, what other job would that kind of... would they not get paid because they, you know... when they're actually doing a job. It's a funny old thing.
I think it would benefit anyone who gets to listen to this episode and gets to listen to all of the insight that you were sharing. Thank you. If they are open to the things that were discussed in here, and the things that you said and gleaned from your wisdom and your experience, I think that they will very much understand that what you just said was not airy fairy.
Good. I like helping people. Yeah. I like people, helping people achieve their potential. So, and I like to hear more great music. So as a music fan, it just happened to me the other day. We listened to a new artist and it was so good. She finally kind of like found that song that kind of.
So do you take any unsolicited music? Like if someone was listening and they're like, how would someone be able to get in contact with you? Are you open to that?
I am, but time is kind of also, I think if somebody, the one thing, and I would say this to anybody, not just if they contact me, but I would say just send one song. Like if somebody sends a playlist with five songs, artists or songwriters that think, okay, well, if they don't like the first song, might like the second or the third song. If I don't like the first song, I'm probably not going to listen to the second song either. I know that sounds terrible, but you know, it's like, time is that, as you were saying, that the one thing that is limited for every human being is time. Time is a commodity. And I love discovering new music. So I will, I've been on the jury for the Ivor Novello Awards. I will always listen, like with all those things, I would listen to a verse, bridge, chorus of each song at least. You know, because we listen through like hundreds of songs. So
I would put links.
We have a really good first verse and a first verse, bridge, and chorus.
Right, because after that, Hellyanne not listening no more. She said, nah, cut off. I'm not listening anymore. I'm going to put, like, you know, your Instagram handle or, you know, Twitter, whatever. Yeah, yeah. Wherever you tell me you want to provide, I'll put it in the show notes so that people will have a way to just express their love or follow you or, you know, check out an article that you write or follow you along your journey in being an advocate for helping songwriters get paid what they deserve to get paid and getting our recognition recognized the way that it should be. Thank you. I also want to say thank you. I want to say thank you for coming on this episode. Thank you for everything that you do in terms of, like, moving our career forward. If no one is telling you that enough, I want to tell you here now, thank you for that. It's very valuable. It's appreciated. This is how I make my living, and it's very important to me. And to know that there is someone else out there fighting that battle, it matters. So thank you.
And I think it's important that every songwriter and composer kind of gets on board as well. I mean, a lot of the time we will do work, but we need people to sign petitions or things like that. You know, it's always good to get people involved. And you know, with the pay songwriters thing, that more and more people ask for points and for per diems, because the more we do it, I always say producers didn't used to get paid up front either, or get points. Gets points on the master. They didn't get points on the master, but they were, you know, I mean, George Martin didn't get points on the Beatles masters, but now if you're a producer, you will get points on the master. So, you know, it's just, you know, it's about that people, you know, value what you do and reward you accordingly. And the more people do that, then it will help everybody.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on.
My pleasure. Thank you so much, Kevin. It's good to see you.